philosophy is very simple. When you see something that is not right, not fair, yeah, not just, yeah, say something, yeah, do something, get in trouble, good trouble, necessary trouble.
Fuse Box. Listen. Smell that?
Huh? Do I smell what? Should I be smelling something? Wait. Are you saying there's something in the air?
You know, that smell you hear is the sound of resistance, bro. The revolution has begun.
I see, and I smell, and I hear.
Yep, it's going down, amigo. Folks, this is Fusebox 265, Good Trouble. And you may just want to start stocking your bunker with supplies, because shit's getting real.
Indeed, Mr. Keynes, time to take to the streets, it would appear. And many already are. But is anyone really and truly surprised by that? Hello, friends, and welcome in to this, the 265th edition of Fusebox, provocatively titled Good Trouble. More about that bit of relevance in a moment. I am your sleepwalking a mile in my own shoes, yet never asleep at the wheel, host, Mark Rose, and over there, always a source of trouble. Good, bad, or otherwise, is the deacon of the downbeat, Milt Keynes, everybody.
Thanks as always, my pasty and resistant friend. Yep. Time to make a whole bunch of good trouble, for sure, bro.
Good trouble, indeed. Which is a quote attributed to longtime civil rights activist and Congressman John Lewis, who for decades led the movement for social change and calling out those things that were, well, to put it politely, just not right in our society, and advocating for folks to make good trouble to effect positive change.
Because let's face it, there's only so far you can get with, what do they call it, passive resistance?
Yep, absolutely. That's one term, yeah. Lewis said that you need to get in there when negative or harmful change is being attempted in order to throw a giant bent and rusty wrench in the works if need be. And friends, the need clearly be.
You know, it's like waking up and finding out up is down, and down is left, and right is sideways, and black is aardvark.
Well, you know, we've got some keen insights into the logic of this current, let's just call it what it needs to be called, this current regime.
Regime, Reich, cult, whatever you want to call it. There's a lot of resistance momentum growing, bro. Did you see that thing about hands off?
Oh, yeah. Is this the group organizing the protests?
Yeah, hundreds of them all over the damn country. And one set for April 5th, so just a few days.
Oh, do you have...
Yeah. Got the info here. It goes like this.
This is a nationwide mobilization to stop the most brazen power grab in modern history.
Trump, Musk, and their billionaire cronies are orchestrating an all-out assault
on our government, our economy, and our basic rights.
Enabled by Congress.
Every step of the way.
They want to strip America for parts, shuttering
Social Security offices, firing essential workers, eliminating consumer protections,
and gutting Medicaid. All to bankroll their billionaire tax scam. They're handing over our tax dollars,
our public services, and our democracy
to the ultra rich. If we don't fight now, there won't be anything left to save.
Yeah, amen. Just like that. Yep, exactly. Well, friends, we'll have a link in the show notes to this site so you can check them out. The map on their website that shows where all these protests are taking place will blow your mind.
Looks like that map has measles.
You know, I just saw what you did there. Yeah.
Just saying.
Uh-huh. Yeah. RFK Jr. is just a few brain worms short of a bait bucket. Anyway, these hands-off protests are really taking off, and in a very, very short amount of time, I might add. Yeah, people are just fed up.
Yeah, and if you're fed up too, folks, join in. April 5th, gonna be wild.
That phrase, Mr. Keynes, rings a distant bell, does it not? Well, when we return, more on this growing uprising, plus a wonderful commentary by Jody Lorimer on the impotent, orange, and flatulent Minotaur in the White House. Plus, a new segment of the Grindhouse Minute from our good buddy 42nd Street Pete. So, stay with us, don't we?
Unless they won't, not can't, bro.
I still think you should have locked them up.
It's finally flying out of the chute, friends, and heading to eyeballs near you. Grindhouse Resurrection Magazine, issue number 3. It's jam-packed with grainy goodness on all 76 pages. Like this, a splendid article by David Phillips on Peter Bogdanovich's 1968 debut film, Targets, starring Boris Karloff in what many consider to be his finest work, which is not bad considering that this film, at the beginning, didn't even have a script. As the story goes, producer Roger Corman was owed 2 days of shooting time from Karloff, and so told Bogdanovich, go make a movie, Peter. Read all the details in issue number 3 of Grindhouse Resurrection Magazine, available from 42ndStreetPete.net. The show for everybody, but not everybody will like it. TheFuseBoxShow.com. Back with you here, friends. As we were mentioning there at the top, we're in a season for making good trouble, as it were, echoing the words of the late and very great Mr. John Lewis, who inspired thousands of folks to do just that. Make good trouble. Be that squeaky wheel.
Or diesel-powered pneumatic jackhammer.
Indeed. Well, we very much are looking at a fair amount of civil disobedience happening around the country, too.
Torching Teslas? Swastika cars?
Definitely saw what you did there. Yeah. That, along with fiery town halls for Democrat and Republican both, with scores of people showing up and expressing their anger, again, from both sides with what's going on in this country right now, because believe it or can't, there are, thankfully, some Republicans in this country who are just as appalled as Democrats with what the Republican Party is trying to do to our country.
Dude, GOP-led town halls where card-carrying Republicans have been told not to attend for that exact reason, that Republican office holders don't want to get blasted by their own constituents.
And, of course, we've all heard the excuses, and by excuses, I mean GOP-fueled rumors, that Hungarian-born investor and philanthropist George Soros has funded all the Democratic-led protests. Come on, folks. Seriously? First, his Jewish space lasers. And now this? Anyway, I heard about a protest here in our fair city of Portland just recently, and there was a Democratic town hall, and of course, they packed the place to capacity. Then they gave the Democratic representative an ear-lashing, too. There is great unrest out there, friends, and I think this is only the beginning.
Good! These MAGA ass clowns are going to wish they never invented the term woke, because folks all across the country are here to kick ass and chew gum. And they're out of gum!
Yeah, because that town hall I was just referring to was with Representative Maxine Dexter, she's a Democrat from Oregon, who reportedly told constituents that Republican lawmakers are siding with Trump in part because they're receiving death threats.
Wait, what? Seriously? Death threats?
Yeah, that's what's being reported.
Well, if these death threats are real, then why the hell aren't these cowards recording and reporting them? I mean, let everybody know what's going on.
Sadly, this is just one more example of the complete and total impotence and cult-minded lunacy of today's MAGA-driven Congress. And in a post...
If I got a politically motivated death threat for exercising my rights, I'd blast it from the goddamn rooftops.
Well, yeah. And in a post on Blue Sky, a gal who posts there as Park Rose Permaculture wrote, quoting, "Here's what I don't understand. If so many GOPs in Congress are truly getting death threats against themselves, their family, why aren't they recording the calls, putting them together, and releasing them all to the public?"
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. What the fuck?
I think the spineless slither is on both sides of the aisle, Mr. Gaines. And along that same line, we have a brilliant commentary from longtime contributor and friend of the show, Jody Lorimer, that puts some of this behavement into a historical and mythological perspective. A piece Jody titled, "A Minotaur in the White House."
We're living the famous Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times. These are mythic times. The world has been thrown into chaos in a single month. Structures that have stood for decades are teetering. Markets spiraling down, trust between nations shattered, tens of thousands of people taking to the streets. A surging sense of menace and dread prevails. All because of a minotaur in the White House. The original Minotaur was an unnatural creature, half man, half bull, who lurked in the center of the labyrinth in Crete, passively awaiting his dinner or his murderer. He was a cannibal, feeding on young victims from Athens abandoned in the labyrinth. It could be argued that the White House is a labyrinth of sorts, but that misses the point. The Minoan Minotaur was a curse made manifest, inflicted because of a betrayal. The story is well known. King Minos begged Poseidon for a sign that he was the rightful king of Crete. The god offered up a perfect white bull from the sea on one condition, that it be sacrificed back to him in a transactional power agreement. But Minos got greedy. He kept the bull, sacrificing a lesser animal. How stupid and selfish to betray a god! Poseidon struck Queen Pasiphae with an unnatural lust for the bull, and the grand artificer, Daedalus, created a wooden cow where she could hide to mate with the bull. The result was the perverse Minotaur, a creature caught halfway to human, trapped till slaughtered in a subterranean lair, an agent of fear and chaos. This is Greek politics as myth. Athens, a backwater, was jonesing for respectability. They needed a hero, an icon, an elevated Theseus, a petulant brat who went around killing creatures and carrying off women, but who had the blessings of Athena, goddess of strategy. The Greeks made a move on Crete, weakened by the eruption of Thera, their civilization crippled by a wall of water upwards of 500 feet high. In a classic case of my god is bigger than your god, they co-opted Minoan legends, transforming the bull god of heaven, Taurus, the harbinger of spring and abundance, into their transmogrified Minotaur, a perversion of nature's order, ordaining Theseus as his murderer. The flowery dancing floor of Princess Ariadne, driven underground, became a dank, labyrinthine prison. Athens' star rose, and the Minoans were forgotten for thousands of years. Ariadne, once the great goddess of Crete and half-sister of the Minotaur, was reduced to a lovesick girl, smitten by the golden boy Theseus. She betrayed her country, handing it over to the invading Greeks. Theseus, ever the cad, betrayed her by dumping her on Naxos and sailing off to Athens, where he became king after his father Aegeus leaped from a cliff into the sea. There is more to this myth, wherein a graceful, matriarchal culture was overrun by brutal warriors. The fulcrum upon which it turns is intertwined greed, power, hubris, betrayal, and materialization of a monster, the rancid wellspring of chaos. The myth has awakened. The origin of the word monster is an unnatural creature arising as an omen of a world out of balance. A warning. The modern Minotaur, dispatched by ballots of voters, has resurrected from the netherworld of Florida, even more fearsome, cruel, and vengeful. He is the agent of chaos, the bull in the china shop of democracy, on a smash and grab mission of destruction and self-enrichment. He is cannibalizing those who brought him back to life, in his madness, spawning monsters of his own. Aristotle would recognize his hubris as textbook. Arrogance, insolence, loss of contact with reality, overestimation of his own competence, victim humiliation for his pleasure. This time, he seems impervious, his rampaging greed trampling the land, sowing salt in the wounds, dragging an army of toadies in his rough wake. Did we ask for this? Where are the deities to punish this monster?
Yeah, where are those damn deities anyway? We need that 650-foot lizard you're always going on about to kick some serious ass, bro.
Well, I think we must be that lizard, Mr. Keynes. And you know, we hear about this tech oligarchy attempt by the orange guy to ostensibly dismantle democracy and reform it in their own image, which I gotta say is a pretty horrifying image. But one of these cats is Marc Andreessen, a billionaire, venture capitalist, cryptocurrency investor, and pivotal but unofficial advisor to Elon Musk's so-called and infamous Department of Government Efficiency. And he made the case in a recent interview that the entire system of American higher education should be shuttered and abandoned.
Oh, unfriggin' believable.
Yep. He says that there's, and I'm quoting now, no way to fix American higher education without replacement. And there is no way to replace them without letting them fail. And in a sense, this is the most obvious conclusion of all time. What happens in the business world when a company does a bad job? It fails, and another company takes its place. That's how you get progress. Below this is the process of evolution. These places have cut themselves off from evolution at the institutional level and at the individual level, which is shown by the widespread abuse of the tenure system. We have just stalled out. We have built an ossified system, an ossified, centralized, corrupt system.
Man, they're always quick to play that corruption card, aren't they?
Yeah. It's usually just another case of confess and project, which is something the grifter-in-chief does whenever he's actually speaking. This is an alarming notion, one that, as we record this show, there are movements to dismantle the entire Department of Education.
Which they said from the beginning they were going to do.
Yeah. All part of the plan Trump claimed he never heard of and doesn't know anything about. Project 2025.
Well, I got one for you.
Yeah?
A dude named Gil Duran a former editorial page editor of the Sacramento Bee and the San Francisco Examiner, now produces a newsletter, I guess, covering the tech industry. And he said that these tech oligarchs, quote here, are an existential threat to democracy. Look at the news. It makes no sense that a presidential administration would seek to crash the economy while allowing an unelected, foreign-born billionaire to rip apart the government. This goes against every rule in politics. Trump's poll numbers are sinking, yet he's taking no steps to correct the course. This is the logic of a suicide bomber.
Wow. Didn't think the orange guy had that much of a kamikaze spirit.
Oh, he doesn't. He's just been conned by even better con men than him.
Yikes. Well, in recent days, the whole deal with deporting folks to an El Salvadorian maximum security prison without due process is getting a lot of attention now.
Yeah, especially by the federal judge who's pissed because those asshats are ignoring his orders. Or they're sending the wrong information. Or they're sending the wrong guy with the wrong information. It's insane, bro.
You know, political economist Robert Reich wrote a fascinating piece on his Substack page where he asked, what's the bigger picture in all this dismantling of education and media and the like? He said, not an attack on the liberal state, as I keep reading, not the culmination of Trump's culture wars, certainly not that Trump is seeking small government over big government or advancing traditional conservatism over traditional liberalism. What's really occurring is an attack on the American mind. Throughout history, tyrants have understood that their major enemy is an educated citizenry. Slaveholders prohibited the enslaved from learning to read. Nazis burned books. Putin and Xi censor the media. Ignorance is the handmaiden of tyranny. Those who believe in democracy, on the other hand, have been at the forefront of the movement for free, universal public education and for public libraries, museums, and the arts. They understand that democracy depends on people knowing what's occurring around them and having the capacity to deliberate critically about it. Trump is only the front man in this attack on the American mind. The attack is really coming from the anti-democracy movement, from J.D. Vance and from Vance's major financial backer, venture capitalist Peter Thiel, who staked $15 million on Vance's Ohio senatorial election in 2022 and helped convince Trump to make Vance vice president. And from Thiel's early business partner, Elon Musk. Thiel is a self-styled libertarian who once wrote, "I no longer believe that freedom and democracy are compatible."
Clearly not compatible with fascists like us, right?
Well, you know it. We have spoken about this trend before. Keep folks dumb and distracted, and you can get away with practically anything. It's never been more clear now.
Especially when they admit they're doing it. So how frickin' stupid do you have to be told you're being conned, but you insist you're not being conned? Or worse, you don't care that you're being conned.
Well, yeah.
Maggots, man. Dumber than a sack of doorknobs.
So, to close out and to wash the taste of authoritarianism from our mouths, we have a grand departure coming up. Our buddy 42nd Street Pete has another grindhouse minute for us, and this one dates back to 1969. And helped to put American Independent Pictures on the map of distributors of note. The film? Satan's Sadists.
You know, it's pretty sad when we have to look to 42nd Street Pete for sanity, bro.
You're right, I am a rotten bastard. I admit it. But I tell you something. Even though I got a lot of hate inside, I got some friends who ain't got hate inside. They're filled with nothing but love. Their only crime is growing their hair long, smoking a little grass and getting high, looking at the stars at night, writing poetry in the sand. And what do? You bust down their doors, man. Dumbass cop. You bust down their doors and you bust down their heads.
And now it's time for another Grindhouse Minute with 42nd Street Pete.
Our next Grindhouse moment is a film from 1969, and this is the film that put Independent International on the map. It's a biker film called Satan Sadists. And the main stars were Kent Taylor, Scott Brady, and a couple other people. Well, they were quickly killed off by the bikers, who are led by Russ Tamblyn, who claimed this film ruined his career. Dude, you really didn't have a career after the West Side Story. Well, actually, they all became pretty good friends of mine. Bud Cardos has the limpest mohawk in the history of biker films. Graydon Clark, who would go on to become a director. Robert Dix. And my old buddy Gary Kent is the hero in this. And it's pretty, you know, nasty and sadistic. Russ plays a real psychopath. And Gary told me he had a great time doing it because, you know, him and Bud got to beat the shit out of each other all the time. Gary and this girl are the lone survivors of this massacre at a diner, and the bikers are chasing them. And one by one, he picks them off. I think there's death by toilet, death by rattlesnake, a bunch of other stuff. And like I said, it's him and Bud basically beating the hell out of each other toward the end. And finally, he gets to kill Russ. Prior to this, Independent International was taking stuff from the Philippines, like war movies. And they were also the Hemisphere distribution arm with the Blood Island films. They really didn't have a homegrown hit, and this like put them over the top. And of course, they never stopped churning out this low budget junk. So that's our Grindhouse Minute for today. Satan Sadist from 1969.
This has been another Grindhouse Minute with 42nd Street Pete.
You know, it's funny. I've never really been a fan of biker films too much. Easy Rider, maybe Electric Glide and Blue, the exception.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I dig them. I've seen a bunch back in the day. Never caught this one, though.
You know, Russ Tamblyn, who's credited here as the best thing he did since West Side Story. I don't know about that, but he did go on to his share of Twin Peaks episode, for which he is remembered fondly. And Al Adamson, the director here, was quite the character himself. This chap had been a noted exploitation filmmaker all throughout the 60s, 70s, and even up to the early 80s, when then he retired from filmmaking to pursue a career in real estate. And sadly, in 1995, he was murdered by a live-in contractor by the name of Fred Fulford, whom he had hired to work on his house. And evidently, Al was buried beneath the floor in his bathroom.
Says here that Fulford was later arrested for the murder when they located him staying at the Coral Reef Hotel in, wait for it, St. Petersburg, Florida.
Where the flack else? And with that cheery note, we'll call it a show, but not before thanking our contributors to this edition of the show, 42nd Street Pete, Jody Lorimer, and Jeff Pollard. Thanks as well to the intramural man of Mirage, Milt Keynes, for technical assistance and co-hostery.
A true slice. And you know, to prevent you from being buried under the floor by a psychotic contractor, you should ought to go to our Patreon page and sign up to become a sponsor of this here thing.
That would be so grand and helpful, too. By doing so, you'll get free swag, early releases, and access to content so secret it can't be viewed by anybody.
That's patreon.com/thefuseboxshow to get started.
And thanks as well to our friends at Grindhouse Resurrection Magazine for helping out. And Pete tells me that for a limited time, if you get absolutely anything from his website, 42ndstreetpete.net, He'll donate the proceeds towards the folks in Ukraine who are having a miserable time, as we know.
Good on you, Pete.
Yeah, because, you know, that's just how he rolls. Thanks most assuredly to you, friends, for pushing play on this one. We couldn't do it without you, seriously.
Well, we could, but what the hell for?
Always the font of clarity, Mr. Kane. I have been your good to the last drop, but better in a flood host, Mark Rose, saying, until our next cartoon.
Fuse.